Well, good morning. Welcome to Gateway Church. If you're watching online, we're so glad you're with us. If you're in the room here at North, so glad that you made it. You're hopefully warm inside. Maybe grabbed a cup of coffee or some hot chocolate today. But I wanted to start today just a little bit different. We are in this journey of prayer, 21 days of prayer. This is day 7. You can go on the Gateway app to follow along with us. Hundreds of you have, and I can encourage you to continue to do so. But in this morning's prayer, as I was listening to Pastor Kenny Green, who at our central campus was leading us this morning, and watching his video on the day, it was about finding rest in God, and how sometimes that can be really tough for us to find rest in God when we're striving. And it's this prayer that we're walking through, the Lord's Prayer as a church. And it kind of hit me as I was between that and then getting ready for this morning, but what it means to rest in God and how sometimes I personally struggle to rest in God. Some of you know this, may not everybody, but in 2023, as we transition the church from our founding pastor, John and Kathy Burke, to Libby and I, we kind of shared a little bit about how 2023 was a culmination of a 5-year process for Libby and I. And not just professionally as a pastor, but a personal process that was started off very joyous, very hope-filled, and within that first year of those 5 years, became very heavy. And it became so heavy that Libby and I started experiencing life very differently. And then our spiritual life was different, our prayer life was different, and it caused some tension even in our marriage because I saw how she was reacting and she saw how I was responding and didn't feel like we were on the same page. But then finally, after a couple of years of that happening, we both kind of landed in the same spot. And today we're going to talk about what does it mean to pray when you have no words? And after a few years of struggling and wrestling through some things, moving across the country, and all these expectations and hopes that we had just kind of dashed, and watching our kids go through these struggles with us. And we have 5 kids, so there's 7 of us trying to figure out life and the moving and the schools and moving to the West Coast and then back here to Texas and all these things. We finally came to a place where there were no words. And then right when we thought it got to the worst, then the pandemic hit. And now the 7 of us are in home by ourselves, really wrestling through what it means. And God, where are you in the middle of our lives? So to better encapsulate this, I've asked Jason to come up here. He's going to join me on stage. And there's a song that we heard a few weeks ago that maybe you've heard. And I think it really encapsulates the heart that we bring to today's message. And it also encapsulates God's response when sometimes we have no words, when sometimes we used up all of our words and we get to a point where we're like, God, okay, here's how I really feel and I have no filter. And then to know that that's exactly the point where God wanted us so that he could respond in kind. Take it away.
Sometimes marriages don't work. And sometimes babies die. And sometimes rehab turns to relapse. And you're left just asking why. And for all the prayers I pray, I still wonder if he's real. And if he is, how is he choosing who he does and doesn't heal? I've tried to run from Jesus. I started only once. I tried the patient waiting and the kicking down the doors. I've cursed his name in anger with my fist raised to the sky. And in return, all he's ever been is kind. And I've burned my share of rage. Turn my tail and run. Watch the wreckage in the rearview. All the crooked things I've done. And I know that he forgives me. But it's hard to forgive myself. I can't help but think amazing grace is for everybody else. I try to run from Jesus. I started only once. patient waiting and the kicking down the doors. I've cursed his name in anger with my fists raised to the sky. In return, all he's ever been is kind. All he's ever been is kind. And I know I wasn't there, but when I look up at the cross, I see the dark stain in history. And I guess that's what kindness does. Try to run from Jesus, I started only one. Tried the patient waiting and the kicking down the door. He knows I don't deserve it, but he's never changed his mind. All he's ever been is kind. All he's ever been is kind, yeah.
You know, here we are in this beginning part of the year. If you watch television or you keep up with pop culture, it's a time where it's award season and people are being awarded for things they've done in television or movies, in the culture. And it's amazing what happens when somebody wins an award and they get up there and they give their speech and almost every one of them run out of time. Almost every one of them, they start playing the music and they say, you're done, because they have so many words, because our culture, our language has so many words, a list, a vocabulary that's expanse when we're on the mountaintop. We have so many words that are superlative, so many words that can describe the joy that we're feeling, that we run out of time. We can write pages and pages of all the great, amazing things, and yet, when we're at our lowest, sometimes words escape us. When we're at our lowest point, sometimes we are left speechless. We're left with nothing to say because we've used all the words to complain, we've used all the words to talk about our hurts and our pains, and yet at the end of the day, when we're still walking through something very difficult, we walk through it and we're left speechless. Sometimes because we can't believe we're in a situation, because we can't believe that this happened in our family. We can't believe that this happened with our children. We can't believe this happened in our business, and we're left speechless. And some of us are living in a season where we're left speechless. Some of us have left a season where we're left speechless. And all of us at some point will go into a season where the words escape us. So how do you pray when you don't have words? How do you pray when you said everything you feel you need to say? So we're going to go to Romans chapter 8. And we're going to read a few verses about what this looks like for us in prayer. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not have, we wait for it patiently. And I don't know about you, but I am not a patient person. I see the word patience and I become impatient. It's like, don't tell me what to do. And don't tell me how I'm supposed to be. And don't ask me to do something that I know I don't have the ability to be patient. Verse 26, and in the same way, the Spirit of God, helps us in our weakness. And we do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our hearts, the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. I mean, have you really ever thought about this? If you've read this passage before or heard this passage, the implications of this, and maybe you've never heard it and you're hearing it for the first time. So let me sum it up for you. Sometimes we don't even know what to pray for. Sometimes we have no words to even pray. And yet Jesus promised that when he left the earth, that he needed to go so he could send another, the Spirit of God, to bring comfort. So this great comforter, the Spirit of God, searches our hearts and sometimes helps us, because when we have no words, sometimes all we have is sounds. How many of you are in a relationship or you know somebody, you have a parent like this, or you're married to somebody that sometimes all they do is grunt? Are you hungry? You know, a simple yes would suffice. Yeah, I'm giving you a yes. I'm making noises as though we're all Neanderthals and we don't have no, and the words haven't been invented yet. And so we learn by grunts and moans. But sometimes at the lowest point of our life, haven't you just been in your room alone and all you can do is cry and groan and ache because of what you might be going through, because you feel helpless, because you don't know what to do? And yet that's what this passage is saying. In our groaning, in our lowest point, when we have no words except sounds because our body is having this response to the pain we might be experiencing, that is communicating something. And God's Spirit, because it's loving and comforting, surrounds us and almost interprets that for us. Listen to how the Message says a couple of verses out of Romans chapter 8, verse 26. And meanwhile, the moment we get tired in the waiting, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. And if we don't know how to pray, it doesn't matter. How cool is that? If we don't know how to pray, it doesn't matter. He does our praying in and for us, making prayer out of our wordless sighs, our aching groans. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition, the thing that's inside of us, and keeps us present before God. And that's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. So how do we talk about prayer when we have no words? How do we talk about this communication when we don't know how to have any more words for that type of communication? And there's a few things that we're going to learn about the season that many of us might be in, or you're walking with somebody who's in a season like this, or you've come out of this season. It's this: prayer is helplessness in action. Prayer is helplessness in action. See, helplessness is a learned condition. It's in psychology, it's a learned helplessness as a negative term, because we've learned it because we faced enough. We get to a point of where we've faced so many things, and we face so many things over and over again, that we've learned to lower our expectations. You ever work with somebody like that? You're like, okay, I'm going to give you this task. I know you're not going to do it, so I'm already going to do the work just in case. And you kind of become helpless about this coworker. You become helpless about a situation you might be in. You become helpless about an emotional thing you're facing. You become helpless about whatever it is in your life. And we get to this place of helplessness that is one of the leading causes of depression, because we've built this cycle in our life because of life circumstances. And we become helpless. And if we're really honest, when we become helpless, it actually seeps into our life and our relationship with God. And we project our helplessness on the one who's supposed to be the great help for us. But prayer takes that helplessness, because prayer gives us hope that we're not in it by ourselves. Prayer is this great assurance that God is with us, even when we're helpless. And prayer is trusting God with our limitations and our frustrations. I know we want to bring our best to God, and sometimes what God sees is our best is actually, in our human terms, our worst. I love this quote from Paul Miller. It says, God wants us to come to him empty-handed, weary, and heavy-laden, but instinctively we want to get rid of our helplessness before we come to God. We want to have it all resolved, and we want to present to God how we're going to handle a situation when we really believe that God wants us to come empty-handed, empty of ourselves, at, at our point where we truly need God the Father to walk with us, and we do the exact opposite. Let me give you an example. Those of you who are like somebody very important in my life, we'll just call it my wife, who go to a hotel room and you clean the room before you leave. Those of you who have the money to hire somebody to clean your house and you clean it before they arrive. Those of you who want your kids to do the dishes, but you want them to do it the exact way you want them to do it, so you actually do the dishes and you're frustrated that they aren't helping you with the dishes. Sometimes that's how we show up to God. We want to clean before he can clean. We want to move things before he can move things. And now I'm sure the person cleaning your house and the person cleaning up that hotel room when you check out or your Airbnb is very appreciative that you already took out the trash. And yet at some point that person isn't able to do the fullness of their job, of what they are contracted to do. And I think sometimes what we do is we take on so many aspects of what our spiritual life with God and with others is supposed to do. And so we come trying to have all of the answers. And yet, God's Spirit doesn't actually remove our weakness. It's made strong and helps us in our weakness. My daughter, Bella, in high school, the high school she went to, and then we moved here to Austin, had morning tutorials. And any student could show up and just get help. But it became a cultural piece in the high school that if you showed up for tutorials, you were just not a good student. Just not a good student. Because why would you need help? Why would you show up for morning help if you're a good student? I talked to my daughter one morning and I said, do you know that some of the top students, and when you go to university, they get help all the time. They're always in front of professors. They're always wanting to get better. They acknowledge their weaknesses, and so they shore up their weaknesses, and somebody else can help cover those weaknesses, and they become a better student. And I had this pep talk with her, and finally she's like, fine, yeah, I'll go every morning. She started going every morning. She saw so much shift in her life because she got past the idea that if I ask for help, I must be less than. And what if the help was there to actually help in my weakness? And that's what God's Spirit wants to do, is draw us in our weakness. And I know it can be very difficult, but it also can be very freeing. It can be very freeing when we face something that's very difficult to just go before God and say, God, I'm really mad that this person I prayed for a year actually passed away. God, I'm really upset because I felt I was supposed to start this business and it's not going well. God, I'm really upset, or I'm feeling just disappointment, or God, I'm at my lowest point. And I think sometimes we forget the gift that it is to be honest. You ever listen to somebody on television and they're just telling the truth and they don't care what the repercussions are, and you're like, gosh, I wish I could just talk like that. I always have to hold my tongue. There's a cultural phenomenon happening right now. This comedian is just telling his truth. His name's Cat Williams. If you don't know who he is, God bless you. But I know who he is. And he's like, millions of people are watching this thing. Don't go, but I'm telling you, it's just crazy. He's saying all these things, and everybody's saying he's crazy. But then there's a lot of people saying, you know what? After all these years being in Hollywood, he's just saying everything he thinks. How many times do you want to go to work and just say everything you think? Right? Some of you are the boss, and you know you can't do that. And yet, in our walk with God, there is no such thing. In our walk with God, it is come as you are. And when we don't even have the words, it's just the expression that I showed up. Because just showing up says, I need you, even when you don't have the words to explain it. See, prayer is helplessness in action. And if we actually follow this passage, there's some pretty awesome things that are happening when you really follow this passage, because it's our deepest weakness and our deepest pain and our helplessness that we really get to experience the fullness of who God is and how he shows up. And how amazing is that, that at our lowest point, God shows up strong. He shows up in his fullness. God, I want to know you. I mean, I remember when I first came to Christ and I was so hungry because I didn't believe in God. I grew up in a church, but I didn't believe in God. So I went to church services and I heard messages and I saw people do all these things. And I didn't really believe it for myself. So when I was in college and I came to know God, I was so hungry and I wanted to know so much. And yet I was going through so much and I didn't know, okay, God, how much of the junk I have do you actually want to hear? Do you actually want to know? And I started really understanding I can bring all of it, because number two, prayer is allowing God to search your heart. It's this permission for God to search your heart, and the Spirit of God comes alongside you, almost like Google Translate. Because we say things with our own words, and God's Spirit interprets it for us. Here's what you really want. Here's what you're really needing. For example, we might say, God, I just want her back. She completes me. And we're expressing this emotion about a relationship, and the Holy Spirit translates, Father, what he really is asking for is for you to show him what true love looks like. Before I met my wife, I was dating this girl, and I thought she was just going to be the one. And so when we broke up, it was just devastating. I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, God, I'm never going to get married. This is never going to happen. It's never, never, never. And yet I met Libby, and I can't imagine ever being with this other person when God brought somebody into my life who was a true helpmate for me. Did I like the process? No. Do I love my wife? Absolutely, 100%. But God didn't give me what I wanted. He gave me what I needed. He gave me somebody who would look at me in the eye and tell me the truth. He gave me somebody who said, hey, I know you believe this about yourself, but that's not true. I know sometimes you think too highly of yourself here. Don't do that. Let's keep you humble at home. He gave me a true helpmate. And I couldn't have a vision for that when I was brokenhearted over what I thought I wanted. And so God searched my heart and brought me somebody that I needed. And David says this in Psalm 139, search me, God, and know my heart, and test me and know my anxious thoughts. You ever have anxious thoughts? God, know my anxious thoughts and see if there's any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. And it's so powerful. One of the great examples of somebody as a biblical leader putting themselves out there is John the Baptist. And John the Baptist is a forerunner for Jesus. He went before Jesus just talking about the Messiah that was coming and all the works. And he had disciples and he was preparing the way. And he gets caught up in the culture and they imprison him. And then he hears about what Jesus is doing. And here's what we read in Matthew chapter 11. After Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went on from there to teach and preach in the towns of Galilee. And when John, this is John the Baptist, was in prison, he heard about the deeds of the Messiah. He sent his disciples, those who followed John the Baptist, to ask Jesus, are you the one who is to come? Or should we expect somebody else? You ever had that prayer? Okay, God, are you the one who's going to help me through this, or should I expect help somewhere else? God, are you truly going to show up? Because if you're not, just tell me I can handle it. I'll go figure it out on my own. This is a spiritual leader. He's saying, I'm just going to be honest, Jesus. Are you the one or not? Want to know why? He had this question because his expectations weren't being met by Jesus. Jesus wasn't turning over the establishment the way John the Baptist wanted to turn over the establishment. I mean, John the Baptist dressed weird, looked weird, smelled weird, ate weird things, was out in the desert. He was marginalized in the society, and he thought Jesus would come and overturn everything. And Jesus, here he is, just, he's healing people. He's doing all these things. He said, wait, hold on, Jesus. I mean, that's cool and all, but are you really the one we've been waiting for? See, his current experience didn't match his expectations of Jesus. And how many of us could ever say that? Our current experience doesn't always match our expectations of Jesus. That's what I love about Gateway Church and people. We just show up. You show up as you are. We have questions. We have doubts and we have fears. And it's okay. It's okay to have those if you have an open heart to truly explore the God who wants to come alongside you as you have these questions and doubts and fears. And it's vulnerable. It's truly vulnerable. And in that vulnerability, listen to how Jesus responds to that type of vulnerability. Same chapter, Matthew chapter 11, starting verse 4. And Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor, and blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." He is saying, I am the one. I just may not show up as the one you wanted. And that can be very difficult to hear in certain seasons of our lives. But again, he says this, "Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me." What does that mean in our English vernacular and how we would normally talk today? He goes, "Blessed are you when you stick with me, even when it doesn't go the way you want it to." Blessed are you when you stick to Jesus, even when it doesn't go the way we want it to. Richard Foster says this, "To pray is to change, and prayer is the central avenue God uses to transform us. And if we are unwilling to change, we will abandon prayer as a noticeable characteristic of our lives. We will abandon communion and relationship with God. We will abandon it all. We will give up this form of communication when we don't want to be transformed anymore, when we don't want to bring change anymore." I was talking to a couple a few years ago, and it was in another church, another part of the country, and she sat down. She said, "We've been married 30 years, and I feel like my husband's abandoned me. He's abandoned our relationship," and she's doing all of the talking, and I could hear her heart, and she was very broken over it. And I spoke to him at the very end. He hadn't said a word in the entire hour. And I looked at this man and I said, "Have you abandoned your wife?" He looked at me and he said, "Ask her," she's in the room by the way, "ask her if she wants to have dinner with me." I thought that was weird because she's sitting 2 feet from him. So I felt like I was talking to my own children. "Do you want to have dinner with your husband?" "Of course," she's been crying the entire, "of course I want dinner with my husband." "Dude, she wants to eat with you. Ask her if there's a spot for me at the dinner table." "Is there a spot for him at the dinner table?" "Well, I'm an entrepreneur and I have a home business." I said, "Okay." And so I use our dinner table to put all of my stuff on. "Oh, so the question is, do you have a spot for him at the dinner table?" "Well, actually, no." "So you want to have dinner with a man but have no room for your husband at the table with you?" "Yes." "So, sir, why do you go to your room to eat?" "Because I have a place there." This woman cried from a true place in her heart, desire for her husband, but hadn't allowed him into the messiness of her table. We worked through it. They figured it out. How many times do we really allow God into the messiness of our table? And yet our heart clamors for him to be with us. He's like, "Just make room, and I'm there." And prayer is allowing God to search your heart, to be at your table with you. Why does this matter for God to search our heart? Because if not, we keep it in. We keep it all in. And when we keep it in, we internalize our pain. And we internalize our pain, we become a retention pond of hurt. When you and I internalize our pain and don't communicate it in prayer, to God, we become a cesspool of all of the hurts and the pains of our life. And then when we internalize, we simply try to fix our own problems. So we become jaded to the idea that somebody else could help us in our weakness because, yeah, I'm just going to figure it out on my own. Or we look to others. We look to others and then we idolize and lift other people up to a place that we should never put people at because we're always going to be disappointed. And so we externalize by praying and bringing it to God. And here's the question I have for you today. Where in your life do you feel powerless right now? Just think about that. Where in your life do you feel powerless right now? And as you're thinking about where you feel powerless, in your personal life, professional life, relational life, emotional life, mental health, where do you feel powerless? I remind you of verse 28, and we know that in all things God works for the good to those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose, and to know that wherever you feel powerless, wherever your current pain points are, God does not waste your pain. God uses our pain to shape and to mold us. He is with us because prayer is the realization that suffering makes us more like Jesus. I don't want to hear that. I know you don't want to hear that. But our suffering and the things that we face make us more like Christ and give us an empathy around who Christ is. It is Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, and millions of people across the country will celebrate that tomorrow. So in light of that, we thought, well, how would he look at injustice? How would he face this from a biblical pastoral lens? And here's a great quote from him. He says, as my sufferings mounted, I soon realized that there were two ways in which I could respond to my situation. Either to react with bitterness or seek to transform the suffering into a creative force. I decided to follow the latter course, to allow the suffering to make him and us more like Christ in the way that we respond, in the way that we do things, in the way that we talk about it. And I know it can be difficult to try to be more like Christ. You know, when Libby and I were going through that 5-year process, I was trying to be more like Christ. Libby wanted to be more like Christ. But as I was doing things over here, Libby was like, you're not facing reality. I'm like, yes, I am. I'm just a man full of faith. Libby's like, you're not telling the truth. Let me tell you how we're really going through right now. Let me tell you how this really feels. Let me tell you how your kids really feel. And I was like, woman, be quiet. That's not a faith response. I am not a super spiritual person, but I became this holier than thou. This is how we should respond before God the Father. And Libby's like, shut up. This hurts. It does not feel good. It's okay to say it. See, when I ignored it, I didn't allow it to transform me. So we allow the suffering to really be what it is. God speaks to us in a particular way. C.S. Lewis talks about this. He says, when we can ignore even pleasure, but pain insists upon being attended to. Listen to this. God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our conscience, but he shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. There's a great hope in our suffering. How do we know this? Because Scripture talks about this. See, when we suffer, we have an endurance that gets built. And when we have an endurance, we have character. And when we have character, there is hope. And where there is hope, there's this understanding that we will not be put to shame. No matter what you're facing, you won't be put to shame because the Holy Spirit is at work in you. It's what Romans is talking about. When we feel shame and downtrodden because whatever we're facing, the Spirit of God comes alongside us. You will not be put to shame. You might face things you don't want to face. You might have obstacles you don't know how to get over, but you won't be put to shame because his love is surrounding you and in you and forming you and shaping you to be more like Christ, even when it hurts. So prayer is that realization that you and I get to be more like Jesus. You're like, well, Carlos, I wanted to start off the year with a little bit more encouragement. But have you ever been encouraged by somebody and you just feel like you're just living in a lie? You ever show up with a smile and you just don't want to? You ever laugh at a joke that you know is not funny? Yeah. It eats a little bit of our conscience away. And when we have words that escape us, you know what really happens? We just come before God and we say, God, I don't even know what to pray. I don't even know how to deal with this personal suffering, but I do it as unto you. Be at work in me. Search my heart. Take my helplessness. Help me be more like Christ. Don't let me waste this pain I'm going through. And there is great hope in that. One of our staff members wrote this corporate prayer for us. And I'm going to read it to you, and I just want you to listen to the words. If you want to pray it with me and follow along, feel free to do so. But we're going to pray this, and we're going to sing together. We're not finishing our service yet, so just let's just sit tight in this moment as we listen to this prayer that one of our team members wrote for us. God, we know things aren't the way they're supposed to be, and it's exhausting. There's deep suffering in this very room and in this world that we are weak and helpless to do anything about. We ache for the day when everything will be made right. Some of us are weary from years of praying the same prayer. We're afraid to admit we don't think you're listening. Some of us are tired of running the race of faith when the world and its desires are pressing in on us. We're hanging on by a thread. And some of us are exhausted, chronic pain, chronic illness, don't know how to keep on going, and there are no words. It's the Spirit of God. We don't know how to pray in these places of pain, but you do. And you're in it with us. As promised, come and intercede for us, joining in our silent cries. We thank you that when we don't have word, you know the deepest places of our hearts even better than we do. We trust you to hear us. We find our peace knowing that you are working it all out for good and to make us more like Jesus, even though we don't yet see how. And in the meantime, God, help us to hold fast to hope and wait patiently for the day you will come again and bring the world and us into your glory. And we all pray, amen.